Welcome, everyone. Call the meeting to order, and please stand for the pledge of allegiance. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
Conklin?
Here.
Crunch?
Here.
Needhammer?
Here.
Sansom?
Here.
Town?
Here.
Quorum present?
We have a pretty big consent agenda. The purpose of the consent agenda is to expedite business by grouping non-controversial items together to be dealt with by one commission motion without discussion. Any member of the commission, staff, or the public may ask that any of the items on the consent agenda be removed and placed as the last item under new business to receive full discussion. Such requests will be automatically respected. We have approval of the September 27th City Commission regular meeting minutes as presented. We have approval of the October 3rd City Commission special meeting minutes as presented. Approval of the resolution recognizing the Michigan Local Government Management Association with the new name of Michigan Municipal Executives and authorize the mayor and or city clerk to execute and distribute the resolution and related materials on behalf of the city as appropriate. We have approval of the recommendation to renew Laura Sampson as to the Boyne City Historical Commission for a 3-year term expiring June 2019. Approval of the recommendation from the Parks and Recreation Board to accept the resignation of members Jerry Swift and Heath Meter. And approval of the recommendation from the Parks and Recreation Board to appoint Lisa Alexander to the board to fill a vacancy with the term expiring on 12/31/2018. And last, approve the recommendation from Parks and Rec Board to appoint Mike Dominion to the board to fill a vacancy with a term expiring on 12/31/2018. So that's quite a hefty consent agenda. Is there anyone from the public or staff or the commissioners would like to discuss anything further? If not, I would entertain a motion.
I make a motion to approve the consent agenda as presented.
Second.
Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Thank you. Hearing of citizen comments, anyone from audience that would like to speak on a non-agenda item, please feel free to. Thank you. We have under correspondence the notice of the grant application approval for the SAW grant project number 152501 from the State of Michigan Department of Environmental Quality. Mark, we talked about that before. That is the
stormwater and wastewater asset management.
Okay, and approximately 700,000.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's good news. Mm-hmm. Moving on to city manager's report, Mike.
Yes, a few items. Just to report that the power supply for our main sanitary lift station on Front Street at Peninsula Beach Park has been repaired and has been running normally again. We had a failure of the main circuit breaker for that facility, which meant that we had to run it off as backup generator for several days straight. Otherwise, the facility operated normally. The matter has been referred to our insurance company, and hopefully we'll be able to get some of the nearly $10,000 that it took to repair that operation. Speaking of our insurance company, we received their bill for next year's coverages. Our premium increase was a little over $2,000, or about 3.5%. The commission may recall that last year we renewed the coverage for 3 years, and that our second year will be started shortly. The rebuilding of our tennis courts at Rotary Park has been completed, at least with the paving. They will be marked and ready for tennis and pickleball use this coming spring. The utility work, which includes water, sanitary, and storm sewer work on North Lake Street right outside the door here, began on schedule and should be completed on Friday. Progress on the rest of the facility continues to move well, with many more floors, walls, and ceilings being installed. And be prepared for the second floor, which is being a lot of it panel assembled on the ground, to really begin taking shape in the next couple of weeks. The base coat for the replaced portion of the access drive for Parkview Apartments was installed over the weekend. I don't know if you've been there and happen to notice that. We've contacted them to see when they plan to finish their paving and reopen their driveway. The temporary access route that we have running behind the 1910 building and past the well number two, continues to work well. I don't know if any of you noticed with some of the gully washers that we had over the last week or so, but their revamped storm water collection pond that's right in front of their property between the first building and Division Street appeared to catch and hold much more water than the old version did, which is kind of it almost bypassed the pond, that the kind of quasi pond that was there, and shifted it to the west. The new one, like I said, collected the water and then sent it into the Division Street storm drain system as designed, instead of onto adjoining properties. So we're hoping that that'll help deal with some of the water issues there as well too. We've had reports of good work and positive comments about the new trails that continued that new trails at Avalanche, and those continue to be received here at City Hall and across the community. The complete intermediate trail has been completed at Avalanche as of 2 days ago. I received an update on that at the fundraiser that they're having this evening. So both sections of that are now open, and they're working on a more difficult of trail at this point. They are having right now, for anybody that is able to leave or desires to leave this meeting before it is over, they're having a worker meet and greet fundraiser taking place this evening at Boyne City Tap Room, second floor, Pine Lodge facility. So they've got a good crowd up there and a lot of positive talk. The Boyne City Police Department's Coffee with the Cop outreach program was held, the first one of those, was held on Friday at Local Flavors and was very well received. Future events and other locations around the city are being planned. Congratulations to all involved in this extra effort to connect with our citizens before they are needed. So far, as of this morning, Cindy reported, and I'm sure there's probably more since that report, 320 absentee ballots being issued. So more to come, and it's really been picking up pace. So, and she just reported it's a little bit higher than normal. The Safe Routes to School project is nearly complete, so excited for that. And we'll be holding a ribbon cutting for it tomorrow at 9 o'clock. We'll be meeting at the same Brockway and M75 intersection that we held the groundbreaking at just a few months ago, and then cross the street and head over to one of the new electronic speed limit signs for the actual ribbon cutting. So we're hoping you'll be able to make it. The Chamber of Commerce's State of the Community Luncheon will be held this Thursday at the Boyne Mountain Civic Center. I don't think I need to state the time since it's a luncheon.
Not the Civic Center, the Vienna Room.
Oh, the Vienna Room. Okay, very good. We're so glad you're still here. Citywide leaf collection is scheduled to begin on Monday, October 17th, and will continue on Mondays and Fridays through Friday, November 17th. So, November 11th, excuse me. It should be November 11th, not the 17th, as stated on here. A reminder that we only collect leaves in recyclable craft paper bags. So put them out in something else, they'll stay. We were looking to have the Boyne City Housing Summit to be held this next Thursday, the 20th at 7 p.m. And that'll be held at the Boyne Area Senior Center, and more details will be coming out on that in the next few days. If you have any questions on this or have like any additional information on these or other items, please let me know.
Increase in our insurance, is that due to the new DPW and new facilities here, or is that just a standard increase? Or?
It's a standard increase, mainly based on our loss runs. We had a couple of items, probably about $24,000 worth in claims in the last year, so they took a look at that. Obviously, they've been shifting properties as we built the new DPW facility, demolished the old City Hall. We actually found some errors in some items that shouldn't be listed on there and other ones that needed to be. So the vast majority of the increase was just based on the loss history.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, and there are no other further questions for me. We did have a special presentation from Chief Gaither, if that's okay with the mayor and the commission.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Chief.
Just come up here where more folks can see what's going on.
I just want to bring special awareness to a couple of people, and John McLeod, Josette, or if you guys would come up here for just a second. One coming up. As you guys know, you know, these folks are connected to the city pretty well. They've been around here, and they've done a lot of nice things for the city in their jobs as well as, you know, community forums. But I wanted to give a little bit of special attention because of some things that came up recently. John, as you know, works part-time for us as a part-time police officer, and he's spent considerable amount of time doing that, even though he has as everybody's aware, a very successful business and takes up a lot of his time. He spent a lot of the time this summer and late in the summer into the fall on a bike patrol for us, doing PR stuff. And it's such a great opportunity to have somebody on a bike and have an officer out there doing that stuff. But John has some special talents with that, and it's really nice that he can do that for us and connect. And we appreciate that he does that. And one of the reasons he can do that is because earlier in the year, he through his connections with his business, somebody donated $1,000 and was able to buy another police bike and outfit it for him. And that's the bike that John rides. And he was able to get that donation for us and get the bike to us. And he rides the bike now as well. And I think I talked about that before. But the other thing that John has done is at his business, he holds an event there every year in the summer. And at the event, he has a silent auction and raises money for some particular fund that he picks. And we were talking earlier in the year about our officer Dan Mercer and the honor guard and the things that he was doing and some of the items that we would like to purchase. And so John just said, well, that's what the fund is going to go to this year. And when that event was over, he gave us a check for $4,100 to go to the honor guard stuff. And just recently we bought some stuff, some floor stand, very similar to the stuff here. We bought flags, the flag stands, the tops, the eagle, the spear. They're a special flag and flagpole assembly that can be used for the honor guard, along with carrying bags for the stand. And we're able to purchase that with that money, and we still have a considerable amount left over. But those are things that not only will our department use, but as Officer Mercer does honor guard, he'll be able to share that with some of the other departments, and they've been to some of our functions and some of the community functions to present the colors, and it's nice to have that. And again, thanks to John, you know, we were able to buy some of that stuff. Interestingly enough, we were in, I was talking to Officer Tavis Tannehill, who recently took over the speed and traffic survey counter. It's a computer, and we put it out and measure speed and measure and count cars with it. And it takes a computer that's Bluetooth capable, and although we have laptops there, we don't have any Bluetooth computers. And Officer Tannehill was bringing in his own computer and using it, which that was the only way we could get it work. And I was talking to him in the back room one day, talking to him, and said, well, I hate to see you use your own computer. We'll try to maybe budget for that next year. And the next day, I got an email that said, from John McLeod, said, yesterday morning I heard you talking to Tavis about him using his own computer for traffic control. Josette, I, and the team were looking for a donation spot to support Boynton City, and we found it. Contacted Tavis, got the specs, ordered up a new laptop, and this laptop showed up. Nice Dell laptop. And we appreciate it again. I mean, it's hard to put into words what that means to a department that, although we have a nice budget and we function well, those are the extra things that we don't have and don't typically buy. And it's so nice that somebody has donated that stuff for us. The other thing was that we were talking about not too long ago was throw bags, and these are rescue throw bags. And because we're a waterfront community, and the police usually are the first responders, how do we get to somebody without jumping in the lake and swimming after them? So we had talked about purchasing these. And it's a bag, and you put it around your arm, and you throw, and it's got about 75 feet of rope, and you know, you could maybe rescue somebody that was just offshore. And again, during just a normal discussion about, you know, how are we gonna pay for this stuff, a couple days later, a box shows up with three of those in, one for each car. Guess who? So, this stuff happens quietly. John,
supposed to.
I know that. I know that. But I think it's important to say we have these tools because of these folks and because they were generous enough to provide them to us. And I just wanted to publicly acknowledge that and say thanks to Josette and thanks to John for doing that.
Thanks, Jeff, for doing this. And he wasn't supposed to do this, but and definitely Josette and I don't do this for the recognition. I'm very blessed to be back with the Boynton City Police Department.
Keep talking, come on.
You can't do two things at once. I'm very blessed to be back at the Boynton City Police Department. I mean, because of Jeff, I was able to come back and do what I wanted to do. And Josette and I have been semi-successful in our businesses, and we do want to give back. Boynton City has been good to my family since 1975 with the business here. And because of Mike Kane, I was able to keep my business here. And it's just our small token to give back. The police department is so important to what Boynton City does. I've been now 17 years, watched the way it was to the way it is today. And because of these men and women that are here today, Boynton City is as good as it was, because it always hasn't been this good. We had some rough times at night and some different people, but because of what they do, or a good part of what they do, is why we're here today. And I'm just blessed to be part of it. So thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
I'm sure I'm speaking on behalf of my fellow commissioners, but we echo Chief's appreciation and thank you, McLeod. It does not go unnoticed. We appreciate that. Mike?
Well, I might just point out that we had the opportunity, the mayor and I, last week, we were invited to make some opening comments at a conference that was taking place out at Boyne Mountain in the Civic Center this time. And they had about 200 emergency management department managers from across the state gathering at Boyne Mountain for the second year in a row. And what led off that that conference was the Honor Guard. And, you know, it does one heart proud watching those four gentlemen, in this case, process into the room with the colors, give them the proper dignity and respect. And I take a special chill when I watch the shoulder, because you're watching going along the side, saying Boynton City Police with our logo on it. It is a very moving experience. Those of us that have been to the chamber functions where they've had the procession come in, it makes a difference. So these little things not only help us as an organization, but help us as a community as well too. I think it builds community pride, and also just seeing the departments working together. Sheriff's Department, the Police Department, other departments, that hasn't always been the case. So little by little, it's a march of a million steps, and we keep making a little progress because of people like John and Josette. So for myself, and I know the rest of the commission, the community as well, too. Thank you.
Okay, hard to top that. Reports of officers, boards, and standing committees. We have the draft minutes from the September 1st Main Street board meeting. We have the draft minutes from the September 1st Parks and Rec board meeting. Draft minutes from the September 12th EDC meeting. The draft minutes of the September 12th LDFA meeting. Draft minutes of the September 19th Planning Commission meeting. And the draft minutes of the September 19th Historical Commission meeting, and draft minutes from the Airport Advisory Board meeting. All of that information was in our packet, so us commissioners are up to speed on all the various boards. Is there any questions or comments from the commissioners?
Congratulations to the new chairperson of the Historic Commission.
Oh, thanks.
Great. Any old business, Mike?
No, sir.
Moving on to new business, the audit presentation.
Well, I would like to introduce you Neil from Gaybridge and Associates and Company, who spent some time with, some quality time with Michelle and I and the rest of the staff here this summer. And Neil's going to present to you the fiscal year ending 2016 financial report.
Okay. Good evening, everyone. I'm glad I didn't go immediately after the police station. Let's see, this is an audit report for the fiscal year ending June 30th, 2016. This is a draft. The city has decided to go out with what's known as a CAFR, a Comprehensive Annual Financial Report. There's going to be about 20 to 30 more pages, mostly statistical information that goes to the back of the report, so that's something new. So it's sponsored by the Government Finance Officers Association. You get an award if you meet all the qualifications, and the city is going this year to submit that. So. Got to complete those schedules. Cindy's doing most of the work. Mike's got to write a introductory message at the front of the report, and those have been included in there. So it'll be about 20 to 30 pages longer. The report we have right now, our responsibility is to give an opinion on the fairness of the financial statements. The report itself is a responsibility of the city commission and management. So even though we provide put the report together as a service, it's your responsibility to put this together. On page one, this is our audit auditor's report. Like I said, we give an opinion. So if you go to page two of the report, there's an opinion paragraph. It says this report, in our opinion, is fairly presented in all material respects for the financial position of the governmental activities and so on and so forth as of April 30th, 2016. I said June 30th, but this is for April 30th. Most cities have June year ends. You're a little bit unique having an April year end. So what, it's an unmodified report. That sounds kind of funny, but if it was modified, there'd be something wrong with it. So in layman's terms, it's a clean opinion. The paragraph right under there, emphasis of a matter, GASB 68 is a new pronouncement that was introduced into this report for the first time. It's very significant, and what it does is it adds the pension liability to the basic financial statements. So the previous net assets had to be restated, and we had to put a new balance on there. It was over $3 million for the city of Boyne for your pension liability. In the past, that was just put in footnotes. Now it became part of the body of the financial statement. So that's significant for you and for all governments around the country. Page four, this is a section called the Management Discussion and Analysis. We put on there, I think, three financial highlights. The third one, at the end of the current fiscal year, the unassigned fund balance of the general fund was $1.4 million, or 27% of annual expenditures. And that's kind of a marker everyone looks to. The state of Michigan, when they used to put out a different report, they thought 13%, anything 13% or low, you probably had a problem. The GFOA thinks 17%, so the city is at 27%, so you're in decent shape there. And it's also important to note that this is at April 30th, so you just get most of your tax revenues coming in. When do the tax bills go out? July 1st? Yeah, so it's kind of a low point during the year. Page 14. We put in there some negative budget variations or variances. assessment and tax area, planning, housing, and transfers. So the state of Michigan probably, when we send the audit report to the state, they probably don't even read your report. What we do is we send an auditing procedures report where we're asked about 20 questions in the financial state. So they're going to ask us, were there budget variances and were they greater than 10% of what the expenditure line was? So we have to answer yes. What that does is automatically triggers a letter. So the city manager is going to get a letter and they're going to ask for a corrective action on how you're going to do better at budgeting in the future. So this report will get submitted 6 months after the year end, so October 31st. November 1st, you're going to have a letter. So they have to ask that. They got new systems, new software. It's automatic. So again, much quicker at that. So you can expect that letter. You know, just answer the question straightforward and get it back to them within 30 days and you'll be fine. Page 18 and 19. These, in my opinion, are the two most important pages in the whole audit report. What it does, so they're called the government-wide statements. So page 18, is your statement of net assets. That's looking at the city as a whole as of April 30th. So it shows your assets, your liabilities, and your net position. Shows total assets at April 30th of almost $39 million. Total liabilities of $16.5 million and total net position of $23 million. So those are significant numbers. You can also see under the section non-current liabilities, there's a net pension liability. So in the first column, it's just over $3 million. So that's that new standard I referred to earlier. So that was never under this financial statement in the past. It was always in the footnote. So that was a significant change this year. Page 19, statement of activities. So it breaks down by functional area what's the net expense of that area. So if you look under governmental activities, general government, the total cost of general government was $1.5 million this year. Now you have some revenues that offset that, charges for services, operating grants and contributions and capital grants. You subtract those and then you get the net cost of what these cost the city. So you can see the net cost of general government, net cost of public safety, public works, community and economic development. So the total net cost of the city for governmental activities was $2,692,256. So it's a good report to say the city as a whole what happened. It's also saying, did the city do better this year? Were we worse off or were we about the same? So if you look at the change in net position, third line from the bottom, so the city is better off to the tune of $1,014,178. So overall, the city's financial position improved a little over $1 million from the prior year. So again, I think those two are the most important pages in the report. Pages 20 to 30, like I say, 18 and 19 were overall. Pages 20 to 30 are the fund reports, your general fund, your water and sewer, so you need good information from that. The notes to the financial statements start on page 31. The first footnote goes from page 31 to 39. And those are the accounting policies of the city. So they tell you which ones you've adapted, gives you definitions and how they work. Page 40 is part of the footnote. And it talks about stewardship and where we, again, where you overspent the budget. And you can see under major streets, capital outlay, you overspent the budget by $465,000. What happened here is the city got a grant to do some work on a street from MDOT. The state administered the grant, The city had to pay in their share to the state. And then the state paid the rest of the money. There were federal monies. But you didn't budget because the cash didn't flow through the city. It just, most of it happened at the state. But you still got to record those on your financial reports. So it's a unique thing. So it's over $400,000. So the offset that is you had more revenue than what you thought by the same amount. But since the focus here is on expenditures, that's why we have to record it. Page 55. So like I said, when we put in GASB 68, we had to restate the beginning net asset balances. So in 55, we show what the impact of that was. It shows the net position way at the bottom, previously reported. There was another thing we had to correct, but the adjustment for implementation of GASB number 68. Governmental activities was $1,728,000. So you saw your beginning net assets of the, or last year's ending net assets, we had to restate those to implement this new change. So that's what that is telling you. Right after the financial statements is what we call a 114 letter, and we're supposed to communicate to you certain requirements for as public accountants and how the audit went. And just generally, the audit went very well. Cindy and Mike do a nice job. Cindy does excellent job getting us the information we need, the reports that we need, and it went very well. And then there's a report on internal control and compliance. This is where we say, well, you know, you shouldn't focus on this, or we saw any problems, and we didn't see any. So we state that in this letter in a couple of different places. So nothing came to our attention for internal controls or for compliance that we thought were problems. Any questions? Or?
So there was no problems in that area, but no controls that we found to have problems with our internal. What was the letter? The letter we're going to receive?
That was for budgeting. Having budget variances.
When we got the Court Street funds, because we weren't actually seeing the cash, and we weren't exactly paying the expenditures, because it flowed through the state. We didn't budget it, and we should have. And the same thing with the Housing Commission. It had to do with the White House that's being renovated. The money was just flowing through here. I didn't think about budgeting it. So, because it was just kind of coming in and out, but it is got to be budgeted. So now we know, because there are still funds that are flowing in this current fiscal year that we will definitely account for.
Was there something to do with the Safe Routes to School and the Pavilion Project too that were a problem? Cause the budget problem?
Okay. No. The Safe Routes to School, we will make sure that we account for that appropriately in the coming fiscal year as well, that we budget what we need to do that.
So the legal requirement in Michigan is to have a budget in your general funds and your special revenue funds. As a good management practice, you do it for all funds. But the legal requirement to not overspend your budget only affects the general fund and your special revenue funds. And that's where those comments come from, or why we had included those comments.
I have a question referring to page 19, where you said that we are basically $1 million better than last year.
Yeah. So the change in net assets was $1 million.
Change in assets.
Would that be from the new DPW build?
Equipment and property.
Yeah, I mean, there's a number of factors that make that up. So
Is there anywhere, I saw that the cost of the DPW is $1.6 million for the fiscal year ending in April. Was there money prior to that? Because the total project was $2 million.
Yeah, that's what I was asking.
Something like that.
Let me think that through, because it did not cross over fiscal years.
I don't think so, because it started pretty, I'm trying to remember other than engineering what we would have had around the time of the groundbreaking, which would have been spring of 15, because we had it completed in December of 15. So there shouldn't have been much, at least nothing.
It was just engineering.
Other than the engineering?
Of construction that I can think of.
Probably soil samples and engineering and all of the stuff.
Those would have been prior, correct?
Yes, yeah.
Okay. So I'm not very good with these yet, or ever probably, but how can you have a liability now with the pension and show a better financial picture?
Well, the big hit, that's why you restate the beginning balances. Okay, so most of the financial hit is shown in prior years, because this is building up for years and years and years, and at a point in time we implement this. So they say, well, what was the impact as of April 30th, 2015? Okay, we show that by reducing net assets, and then just the change in the current year gets shown in the April 30th, 2016 financials.
So does it mean we're fully funded or still at the 75 or 76%?
You're still
79.
Yeah, right somewhere.
The other thing I struggled with here was when you talked about depreciation. Mm-hmm. Is there something we should know about depreciation as we move forward or look at the big picture? Does that relate to setting money aside for equipment that's going to be going down? Or is there any relationship or anything we should learn from that?
Well, first, know that depreciation is an estimate. So there's no exact science that this asset's going to last this long. So it's an estimate. So, and we usually use straight line depreciation. So if you say an asset's good for 10 years, you take the cost of the asset and divide it by 10 years and charge depreciation that way. Typically, when we go into an audit, I ask the manager of the department, how long do you think this asset's going to last? So we're getting input and putting it on the fixed asset report that way. So.
And then does that information end up at a capital improvement plan or something like that?
No, what comes in there is basically a manager's opinion of when the asset's going to wear out and the estimated time you're going to need it, especially if there's technological change, which is happening all the time, and you may want something sooner. So the other thing we look at when we do the audit is we look at your major assets and have they been impaired in any manner. So the book value is on there, let's say $1 million, but you know, because of technology change, it's only worth $200,000. So we would write those down. And we didn't have any write downs this year that we saw. Mm-hmm.
On the opposite end of depreciation, do we have any going forward appreciation of property values?
Well, property values have been going up since the...
Right, which figure into the assets.
No, there's no, because the way we are right now with the financial model is historical cost. Mm-hmm. So if you acquired land, you know, 20 years ago, what you paid for it at that time, that's what's on the books now. Mm-hmm. So we're getting to a new standard where we're going to start looking at market values and incorporating that, but that's a couple years off.
Okay. And I have a question on page 15, just for information-wise. It says the city is well under its legal debt limit. What is the legal debt limit?
It's 10% of your assessed value.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. You made a comment earlier this regards to page 4, the funds that are unencumbered. This is the unassigned fund balance. You make a comment that this would be the low point of the year because ending the fiscal period April 30th, but the revenues don't start flowing again to
New tax revenues, right.
New tax revenues to July, so where's the high point in the year that changes this from maybe 27 to 40% or?
All your tax revenues have to be in by September 15th, the cities.
So September 15th, there's a different number to work with then.
Yeah.
Well, but we planned, we budgeted the use of that funds, yeah, for the rest of the year, so.
And when I threw that out, that was a caution, so, you know, your biggest revenue source is your property taxes, and the timing of that can have a big impact on that percentage. So you are pretty much at the low point. The lowest point would have been June 30th, and the highest point's probably going to be September 30th.
Yeah, but because of budgeting, it doesn't matter what that is until April 30th of 2017.
Right. Correct. But I mean, if everyone's looking at that marker saying, you know, what's the percent of fund balance in total expenditures, because we looked at it at the year end, which is April 30th, and you tried to compare yourself to a county, for a bad example, mm-hmm. who has the September year end, you know, you're not making a good comparison.
Or if you look at your financial statement that you get from us every month, and you'll see what your cash balances are, you see what they look like in the general fund right now, and you'll see they'll start to peel off as time moves on.
So in other words, we're in fairly good shape at this point.
Yes, okay. I think so.
Lower than
my I am a CPA, but I spent number of positions like Cindy is here. So, you know, what's important is your capital improvement plan. What you might want to consider doing is 5-year financial forecast beyond your 1-year budget. Mm-hmm. I always put those into place. And everyone knows what you want to do, and it improves communication and understanding. We have that right now.
We have a capital improvement plan.
Yeah, we don't have a 5-year financial forecast looking forward.
Just
when you get the budgets, we have like a 12-year looking back, but we don't have the forward.
But we do have a CIP plan, which is it, you're saying that's just 1 year?
No, that goes out many years.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's not talking the same thing.
Well, that's a part of. That would be a component of. Okay.
Yes, that's a part of.
But you have
the CIP doesn't include things like fringe benefits and, you know, other costs.
And it doesn't project your revenues. I mean, right. So you need to kind of take a bigger picture of this.
Okay. It's basically set in your budget 5 years out, almost per line.
Okay.
Okay. No.
Estimates, yes.
Estimates.
Well, one question with that fund balance I have is, so there's a possibility, I mean, there was discussion of the open space here that we're going to have to come up with a sizable match, you know, anywhere from 800,000 to maybe a million or more. Mm-hmm. And then there's a $320,000 match for the pavilion, but not all of it is, I mean, some of it's already been fundraised. Should we be thinking of some other way of making the match rather than using the general fund balance?
Years ago, I went to a conference put on the MEDC, and they said, you know what, we want you to get as creative as you can be. Use your own sources, get grants, get loans, get donations, you know, whatever the major constituents of that project are, you know, use all of them. So.
Is a millage part of that package?
If you think you could pass one, and I mean, that's an option, yes.
So from a management's perspective, there's no surprises in this audit. I think pretty much everything that we've talked about is stuff that we knew and that we've talked about mm-hmm. with the commission previously. We knew that the pension liability was going to come forward. We're no better or worse off than we were when it was reported under the old system. You just see it a lot differently. It comes forward. And that has implications with regards to not only our community, but other communities across the state of Michigan, I think nationwide.
Yes.
As they're going out and looking for financing and things like that, because you're going to look and say, okay, you've got an obligation here. Boyne City, with its 79% funding balance, is standing much better off than most communities. It was was surprising when Hugh and Tom and I were at the LEAD conference, hearing how many communities were at or below 50%. And just, you know, and they were having meetings about talking about, you know, borrowing money to be able to pay this off. And I'm just trying to figure out where's the long-term success in that. I think it's important for the commission, even though there are differences in how the audit was presented last year to how it is presented this year, to compare some of the numbers between the two. Ron mentioned page 4, looking at the unassigned fund balance, which is something I've been kind of harping on for a while, as we're spending it down. And we're spending it down as we anticipated. Like last year, we built the DPW facility for $1.6 million is the number that came out of the accounts last year. We paved Court Street with curb and gutter, which was, even though that we got a large grant to help pay for that, and assistance from Evangeline Township was another sizable expense as well. And if you go back to page 4, and I have the one up here from this year, where it talks about 27% of the general fund expenditures, last year we had $2.673 million, million dollars in that that was unassigned for fund balance. That was 82% of that. And as Hugh just mentioned, I mean, we have some big expenditures on the horizon, and we're going to have to look and decide is how much of it do we want or are able to take out of our fund balance, and what other sources might we want to have, or are we going to be able to do everything that we would like to do? So those are going to be issues that we're going to be dealing with. As the fund balance that's unassigned gets lower, Cindy has to be more creative and keep a closer eye with regards to making sure we have cash to go and cover all the expenses. We've had departments in previous years where we've been able to basically loan them money, transfer money from here to there to help them get through a soft cash flow period. We're going to have less ability to do that. I'm confident that, you know, Boyne City is still, on its own, it's in excellent shape. Compared to other communities, we're in more than excellent shape. But again, we have to be careful going forward with all the things that are on our want list and a declining amount of revenue to deal with it right now, at least in our piggy bank at this time. We have to be careful on as we're setting priorities and figuring out what we're going to do. Also keep in mind that it appears that our ability to obtain grants from the state for a variety of reasons, because of changed priorities and because of our changed low and moderate income status, is going to be different and probably not as beneficial as it has in the past. So I'm not trying to paint a doom and gloom picture here. Again, as I keep saying, my job is to keep you and the community out of trouble. We got some good times going now. We got a lot of growth going on in town. There's a lot of positive things. There's a lot of great opportunities. We have to make sure that we balance those and hopefully never put ourselves in a position so that if a downturn comes again, when the downturn comes again, or if there's some crisis or some, you know, major infrastructure thing that we need to deal with, that we don't have avenues to respond to. I locate always having options and presenting you with options, and I'm seeing some of our options decline as we spend down money for good purposes and as we plan. But again, there's nothing on here that surprises me with regards to this audit. It shouldn't come as any surprise to you. We've been talking about it for time and time again. But the purpose of this is to have an independent source come in, take a look at the information that we're presenting to you, hopefully make sure that it's well presented, balanced, and that we're not just kind of spinning some story one way or the other, and that you have some reliable basis for making your decisions going forward. So I would encourage you, again, even though there's variances, and it's good to look and see how, just like the pension fund has affected what we had in last year's audit, things of that nature. So I would encourage you to spend some time, not only with this document in its draft form, but also go back and compare it to what we did last year, and come up with some more questions and thoughts and things like that that you can discuss with Cindy or myself, or if you'd rather discuss with the auditors, or if we're not sure of it, we'll go to the auditors and ask them about it. I mean, that's part of what we hire them for, is to answer some of our questions as we go along. I also wanted to point out, and it was mentioned earlier with regards to the additional step that we're going with our financial reporting documents and going after the CAFRAs, I think is the abbreviation that they call it. That's a huge step for this organization. And Cindy's to be strongly commended for taking that on. It's extra work for us to do. And I would be surprised if we get it in our first year. They usually deny it the first year and find some faults to fix in the presentation of it, just being through working with other communities that have been through this process in the past. But once we achieve it, and we will achieve it, whether it's this year or in a future year, it's going to put us head and shoulders above, again, a lot of our neighboring communities or communities across the state. So I think this is another step where hopefully you can be confident of the information that was being presented to you in a fair and balanced way. And hopefully through this CAFRA process, it will be more accessible to our citizens as well too, which is one of its purposes, is to make sure that it's complete and pretty well accessible information as well.
We probably have a dozen clients who get this award. So you know, there's a good chance you're going to get it just because we've been helping Cindy.
And just to be clear, it's not just me putting all the work together. I have been pretty much a nag on everybody back there. So, except for John, you and I will talk in the morning. But so, and I appreciate everyone's help in pulling information together.
Is this award for government or is it private sector award
too? It's
for
government.
So when you say 12 clients, that's 12 other communities or villages or counties or?
Yeah, counties, cities. Yeah, villages, the ones we do are pretty small. And it doesn't make sense for them. So we see most in our cities. So. Probably the closest one here is Cadillac. They've been getting it for years. So.
Alpena.
Do you know Karen Heber?
I should call her.
Any conclusions, Cindy? Or
no. Once again, it's a learning experience, and they're not here just in June and July for us communicating. They're here with us all year. It's a learning experience all year. They're here to give us support and information and guidance and direct us to the right people if we need to. And I appreciate everybody's help throughout that time. I know it's very busy. It was particularly crazy because, once again, it was between the 4th of July and Boyne Thunder, which you guys knew what was happening. We put that up front that that was going to be happening, and things went well. We greatly appreciate it.
Okay, thank you. We appreciate the presentation.
Thank you. Have a good evening. Thank you.
Moving on to item B, tree removal bids. Andy?
Thank you, Mayor. It's time for annual removing of trees. This year we found 55 trees that probably could be taken out if we needed to. And I based the bidding process on that number. However, we had some earlier expenditures this year for some emergency tree removals, almost 10,000. Transplanting three of the trees that were over here at the old City Hall site down to the open space, and a couple other trees that we transplanted also that went down to the boat launch area. So we had some extra expenditures in this line item already this year, so it kind of cutting back our available funds. We're looking at, in the next presentation will be the tree planting, which is $14,739 this year. So that's going to leave us a balance in that fund of $13,611 for tree removals. And it's my recommendation that you allow me to proceed with that dollar amount and the look at the trees with the contractor and adjust or decide which trees you really need to take in and not exceed that number. So, thank you.
Okay. Is there any comments from staff for the public?
I'll just let the commission know that finding a balance between the trees we're planting and the trees that we're removing is always a delicate operation. As Andy indicated, we had 55 trees that were determined that needed to be removed. Doing this 13-6 does not remove all 55 of those trees. Andy and I had some serious discussion about that. A dead tree is a very potentially unsafe tree. I want to make sure, as much as I want to do plantings, I want to make sure we're taking care of the safety issues in our community first. So I asked him whether that 13-6 was sufficient to deal sufficiently with the trees that he felt were a hazard. He assured me that he thought that they were. That doesn't guarantee that we might not have some type of a storm or something come through that affects additional trees, and we might have to come back and do some budget amendments with regards to it. So I just want to make sure, in my reporting to the commission, that you're aware of the balance that we're trying to strike here, that we are not removing all the trees that could be removed. We'll be able to work on that in future years as well, too. And if something changes after the commission approves that, if they choose to approve it tonight, we may be coming back and saying, okay, we've got some other safety issues that we need to deal with.
Thank you. Any other commentary? Go to board deliberation. Would you like to start?
Support the recommendation.
Gene?
Yeah, again, I'd like to see more beds, but all aspects that have been our old bidder for the last 2 years, as Andy said. The only question I got, I was going through the cemetery. Did this include any trees in the cemetery or not?
Do not.
Okay, I didn't think so. I wanted to ask. I'm okay with the recommendation.
Laura?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, it's nice to see that we're maybe getting down, because last year you said we're almost there getting rid of all the dead ones and hopefully catching up on that level.
Now we have some new diseases coming through.
Oh, gosh, yeah. I was going to ask what changed, because... Yeah,
the beech one in the oak wilt now is really starting to take off. We've got a lot of the oak trees that we have are already being affected pretty heavily.
Okay. And then, so these, basically what you're going to do is go around and pick the worst of the... Of the right. 55 and however much money will go, and then
the
if it changes.
The contractor certified as a hazardous tree expert, so which is something I'd like to go to a class and get
okay.
Also, but yeah, we'll make those prioritizations based on his opinion about the condition of the tree.
Okay, I appreciate the 58 going in for sure. Okay, thanks.
You?
Well, I share Mike's concern. You know, there's just something about public safety that I think is really important, and it seems like we should try to find the money to do the 55 trees that have been identified, if it's all possible, which is, what, $28,000? I don't, you know, they've been identified. Or which ones are at risk? I don't know ones that are a public safety hazard. I mean, they've...
Those would be the first ones we look at, the ones that are definitely. I mean, they've already been around and looked at the trees and have a pretty good.
So they're the ones who identified the trees that should come down?
No. I look at the trees and say, okay, this one you can see has got a split in, or it's got an abundance of dead limbs on it. Okay, that should probably come out. But always as a back check, when they go to do their bids, they will let me know if there's a tree. Hey, this tree's okay for a couple more years, maybe just trim it up or something like that. They actually do that for us. Which is nice. It's a good service to have, and that's one of the reasons I'm kind of glad they bid on our project every year. So.
Was there any discussion of maybe cutting back on the number planted so there was more to remove trees?
Mike and I did discuss that, and that's something we could do. The city commission saw the desire. I'm afraid we're going to get into a situation going forward where we have to take down more trees than we planned. And it might be nice to kind of get a big chunk on, at least for this year. Trying to get started, get stuff put back in. That's going to happen.
My thought. Will the Huntington Bank tree come down?
Yes.
Definitely.
So my question, are most of these trees in roadscapes?
Yes, they're all in the city right-of-way.
Okay.
Road right-of-way.
And that has nothing to do with 2 years ago when we had the power line trees identified by the power company, they had to come down, they trimmed them themselves.
Right, that's all theirs, that does not affect ours.
So this is 50-some that are, okay. Okay. Yeah, I'm in support also.
And I just want to mention two things. One, I hope you're not taking what I just said as changing the recommendation. The recommendation's initialed by Andy and myself, so it represents our joint opinion. I just wanted to let you know the discussions that we had with regards to, so I support Andy's recommendation, so I don't want there to be any unclarity with regards to that. But again, I want to make sure that in disclosure that you hear the discussion on an important item. Two, there was a question or a comment with regards to whether cemetery trees are included. And this isn't an approach that I would encourage us to use as our only means of replacing trees, but we were advised by our insurance agent that there's a new coverage for trees in cemeteries. That basically, and I forget what the dollar value was, it was $10,000 a tree or something like that. And if a tree comes down in the cemetery, they'll authorize up to $10,000 to have it, you know, chopped up. So that's a nice safeguard in the cemetery with regards to it. It shouldn't replace proper tree removal processes with regards to it, but it gives us a level of coverage in the cemetery that we didn't have in previous years. So I just want to make the commission aware of that as well, too.
I was wondering about that.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, so at this point, I would entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion for consideration to award the bid for tree trimming and removal services for this year to All Aspects Tree Service for not to exceed the amount of $13,611 and authorize the city manager to execute the required documents.
Second?
I'll second it.
Any further discussion?
Well, it seems a little awkward to talk about this and not talk about the next item on the agenda about planting trees if we do any negotiating with amounts. So, that's my comment.
Well, you're in the period of discussion with regards to the motion, so there isn't anything that would preclude you from bringing up the issue now.
Yeah, I think there should be some, you know, I mean, we're meeting a full budget on planting, and I appreciate that, certainly, but, you know, I just want to make sure that every tree that has a potential, I mean, you don't know that for sure, but all the trees, I wouldn't want Andy and Mike to be, you know, hamstrung with $13,000 or whatever.
Well, if I may interject, I think My sense was, unless I misunderstood, is that if there are additional ones that are identified as being potentially very hazardous, that you would come back to the commission for a budget amendment on that or additional funding. For if there's two or three, say a half a dozen more trees beyond this number, if they're going around and say, well, there's three more that are really, really bad that we need to add in, I'm sure would you not come back?
Yes, we would.
Yeah. Okay.
But also go back to my earlier statement on the audit presentation with regards to what's happening with regards to fund balance, that we're going to have less and less of an opportunity
to do that.
We've been in a great position where that's been relatively easy for us to take that option if we ran into something, and we generally don't. Mm-hmm. We usually used our fund balance to go after opportunities that presented themselves for getting additional funding. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to be more in a position of, you know, backstopping things like that, and we have less backstop to work with. So yes, that's what we would do, but at some point that's going to have implications. You know, let's say something, a storm comes through and we need another $10,000 for trees. That's going to affect what we do with the budget for next year. Maybe we're getting less park equipment, you know, fewer benches or something like that, or we don't do as much sidewalks or, you know, something of that nature. You know, it's going to be more, rather than just taking that out of our fund balance, we're going to have to make decisions as to compromises between exchanges between programs and services.
in regards to not coming back to the budget, I took it, Hugh, that in Andy's opinion, he's not going to leave anything that's standing that is a danger to the public. So I guess I feel comfortable with moving forward with that understanding.
Yeah, but Mike just said that if it goes above the 13,000 or whatever, that we're going to have to pull, if we fully fund the other, that we're pulling it out of the general fund, so.
Correct.
Yeah.
I mean, the option that you would have if you wanted to provide a built-in buffer would be to say, okay, we understand that at this point, we're going to expend the 13.6 as recommended now, but then we're going to set aside some type of a buffer in funding. Set it for what you want. We've got the next recommendation, we're going to say 14,739, and say, okay, we're going to set aside $2,500 of that just as a stopgap. So if something does come up, we've got something that we can work with without having to go back and say something. That doesn't mean that the $10,000 event may happen or that
right.
nothing happens.
Right, yeah.
So does that need to be clarified in the motion, or are we okay with moving forward?
Well, right now the motion that's before you on the table is with regards to the funding of the 13.611. This ties into the discussion that you're going to have next with regards to the 14,739. You can approve the funding for the 13,611 right now based on what I just said, if you were comfortable with that, and then have further discussion when you get into the 14,739, whether you want to fully fund that or whether you want to set some reserve aside from that, which would, I think, start to address Hugh's question. So I think you can pass this motion and continue the discussion in the next one. Or discuss it more now.
Or could it be where they come in and do their tree removal and then tree planting comes after that? So then you know. Well, yeah. You're right to move forward the way you suggested, Mike.
So any further discussion? Yes, Andy.
You just brought up a valid point. We could hold the planting until spring, do an April 1st start on the planting. And if we run into some major issues, we're running out of weather to get this, both these projects done. So, but we could hold the tree planting until spring. If we run over our 13.611, we'll know where we're at for the planting in the spring. And that's a possible way to do it then.
Andy, do these prices hold until spring, or do we have to rebid that?
I'm thinking he will hold the prices. I can confirm that with him. I'm thinking he will, because they're just a few bucks different than what we've had for the last couple of years on these tree prices. So, you know, a couple of them are 20 bucks higher a piece. But again, that's not really a major deal, so.
I would almost recommend, I mean, we're kind of jumping a little bit more into item C at this point. We can probably, you know, I think it's a good point that we brought up, and we may discuss it. You may want to discuss it further on C, again, unless you want to discuss it now.
Do you have a higher success rate of growth in the fall or spring?
Some trees are better to do in the fall, some are better in the spring, like oaks, for instance, are better, I guess, to be transplanted in the spring, from what I understand. So the rest of them are pretty much, they seem to survive either as well. So. You know, and for us in the fall, we don't typically plant a lot of oaks like this year. We've got five. I think last year we had seven or eight. So, you know, versus, you know, 20 of the sunset maples. I don't think it's super critical in that regard as to the maples seem to take no matter what, where you transplant, as long as they get, you know, enough water, you know, and not too cold, too quick.
So.
Well, should we call
that kind of muddies the water? So.
Yeah, it does. I guess, what is your personal feeling? Is it that the 13.611 should be adequate with maybe a little bit of padding? Or, you know, it seems like the public right now, I mean, a lot of people, when they see me, they're looking forward to the trees going in as well. I mean, it's just been tradition that we've done it that way. It doesn't mean that we have to do it that way. It's just.
I think we can do a fairly good job with the 13.611. We may miss a tree or two, or we may have some trees that become an issue later in the year. It's hard to say. You know, there's trees out there that have looked real bad for so long, but you go check them and they might look bad, but they're still actually in fairly decent shape. So.
Yeah.
And that's basically my opinions on how they look. So I haven't really been properly trained in assessing the cannabis trees. So, I mean, if I look and I see them with a big split down it, that's pretty obvious that they're an issue.
Well, I would call for a vote on the first motion of the 13,000.
Any further discussion? Okay. Roll call, please.
If I could interject.
Yes, Mike.
I'm just trying to think how what's the best way to proceed with this with regards to, and if we do run into a situation with regards to additional trees that have to be removed, the last thing we want to do is have some event come through and have to wait for it to come to another city commission meeting or to come to a city commission or hold a special meeting with regards to it. I mean, if there's a storm to blow through, we want to get on it right away. And if there was an emergency, we wouldn't follow up afterwards. I'm just wondering if there's language, the motion that's before you is to award the contract to All Aspects Tree Service for an amount not to exceed the $13,611. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if we want to change that to an initial amount of $13,611 and authorize staff to use the bids to do additional work as necessary during the remainder of the year. That would basically give staff the authorization to exceed the $13,611 by using this contractor. So we're not just authorizing this contractor for $13,611, we're authorizing staff to go get the $13,611 done now, and if something comes up, you can go and use them. Mm-hmm. Then we'll still have the issue of where's that money going to come from.
Or jumping into the next item, which is the trees themselves going in. And you said it's better to plant like the oaks in the spring. If we held off on planting the oaks till spring and maybe whatever other species may be better for the spring planting, like the Juneberry and Annenberry, for instance, we do half and half. We plant the maples now, and then if the public wants to know what happened, we just say it's better to plant certain trees in the spring and certain trees in the fall, and then do that route to see.
And it also gives us that
flexibility. I don't know if that's a good idea or not, but it's just a thought. So that we get some trees in and started this fall.
What do you think, Andy?
I don't know if Robinson would, or if whoever does the planting would go for that, though, or how that would change their cost.
Yeah, some more extra mobilization, some more digging, a couple times a year. He's going to want to. More than likely, you all digging at one time out of his stock and he has to get burlap and ready to roll. So,
so the price may go up because he's doing it two different times.
He's doing his twice.
Yeah.
So it's really a good possibility to want, or not so much want more, but say, hey, we need to knock a few out just to help cover some of my extra expenses. So.
Well, Mike suggested an amendment to the motion. Who made the motion?
I did.
Would you want to change the language to reflect what Mike suggested?
The language that Mike suggested.
And that gives us some flexibility.
Can you repeat that flexibility?
Basically, to amend, so the motion is not that basically we're hiring All Aspects Tree Services per their bid submitted. I guess I would say not to exceed the $28,050 that they originally did. Authorize the immediate removal of the $13,611 that has been recommended by Andy.
That means then there's no.
No, that just gives us
money at all left.
No.
We use it all.
No. That just sets a limit on what staff can spend on having tree removals done.
But
all that we're doing right now is the 13.6. Then we'll talk on the other one, what you want us to do with regard to the rest of it.
Yeah, then we'll just take that up separately.
Okay.
Okay, I would support that amendment.
So, the motion has been amended with the second. Any further discussion? Roll call, please.
Grunch?
Aye.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Sansom?
Aye.
Town?
Aye.
Conklin?
Aye.
Motion carried.
I think we've already pretty much covered most of the high points on the next topic.
Basically, what I would do with regards to the recommended option with regards to Robinson Landscape and Nursery for the $14,739, and authorize the city manager to sign the necessary documents. I'd almost have you kind of do what you just did for the removal on this side as well, too, incorporating some of the discussion that the commission took place. So I think a motion, if you wanted to do this, to authorize us to hire Robinsons, not to exceed the $14,739, on a timing basis as best determined by staff. So we can do some, we'll contact Robinsons, and we can do some plantings now, and set aside, you know, maybe we'll look at maybe about half of it or something of that nature. Mm-hmm. That'll give us $7,000 approximately to hold off and see if we can do that in spring. If Robinson tells us no, he wants to do it all at once, mm-hmm. then we'll see about just putting it off into the spring, so that'll get us through the winter, and we'll have our reserve there. If he can split it, you can get some of the ones that make sense to put in the ground now. And so that, again, you're giving staff some flexibility, but if we go through the winter and everything comes back fine, and Robinson's fine about doing them in the spring, you'll have already approved the $14,739. So if our best case scenario goes forward, mm-hmm. we'll still be at the tree removals at the 13,6. And come spring, if everything goes right, we'll be at the $14,739. So we'll be just as what we're proposing now, but we'll have flexibility to bob and weave in case we have a storm comes through that takes down some trees, or we find that there's some more seriously dangerous ones that need to come out in advance.
Okay. If some of these, say, trees come down this winter, or we need to take more out and we need to trim this list back so it's not 14, it's maybe 11,000 or 12,000 worth of trees, then when we adjust that, do we adjust it by whoever was last on the sign up?
Correct.
Okay, and you just knock off the last three people,
you
put them on
the
next list. Okay, all right. I just wanted to make sure we do it that way.
And they would automatically get on next year's list.
Right. Okay. All right.
Well, I think there might be a caveat depending on what we just talked about. If we're looking to do some plantings this fall, depending on who requested and what type of tree we're putting where, that could have an impact on that.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, that's true too. That's what
so
I was wondering how that would work.
I would assume the remaining trees that haven't been planted, if we're able to do some this fall, we would handle in the order that Andy just recommended. So the last ones in for the trees that were remaining would be the last ones in.
All right.
But there would still be a possibility if somebody wants to have a tree that's good to plant in the fall, they may be lower on the list than somebody that might still be waiting.
Okay. And the spring planting, what time frame would that be? April or May?
Yeah, typically April, between April and May.
So our new budget starts in May too, doesn't it?
May 1st.
So we could technically put that part into the May budget, right? The next year.
Well, then we'd have to short ourselves the following year.
Yeah, it'll catch up with you. But
yeah,
it could.
Yeah, but I mean that's another alternative as well, isn't it? Okay.
That's how Lansing does their budget.
Yeah, I know. But it wouldn't be that many, hopefully. It would only be, you know.
Yeah, I was thinking some budget cycles during the Milliken and Eckler administrations.
Yeah. They just changed the month so that they balance their budget,
And I do have one other thing on trees, and I hate to bug you, but I'm going to. We have watering bags that we haven't used, and they're still in need of being used. Would it not be maybe, I know we've been setting them aside and thinking we're going to use them in each season, and then we get rain and then we don't use them. Would it be wise to put some of those watering bags with trees that go to, like in front of people's residences, who would be willing to keep those watered by using those bags? Just
absolutely.
As a loaner, say, do you want a bag to go with your tree to help you water this through the first season, and then it gets picked up and returned to the city for use the next time out, rather than just sitting idly, not doing anything.
We need to use some,
Right, so, I mean, but maybe that would be something that people would like to have to help them keep them watered, so we don't lose trees that we plant, because we do lose trees, I mean, we lose, what, 10%? Basically, so.
And there's, I, to go along with that, almost a, an obligation by the people that are requesting it.
Right, that they should.
They should take ownership and keep that tree watered, either through the bags or just through their own efforts, but yes.
But a bag might be really helpful for a lot of people.
I agree, I agree.
So maybe they could then be signed out on a loaner basis, like I said, for that first year, at least to get them established, and that would be maybe better, potentially saving dollars down the road, so. Okay, enough on trees.
So is there, yes?
I just have one quick question for Mike that came up as he was talking. So Mike, does the insurance cover any downed trees? I mean, is there any coverage for that? Like if it, so we have a wind event of some sort. Does our insurance cover cleanup, or only if there's property damage?
Mainly only if there's property damage, if it lands on somebody's property. Other than what they just said, they'll start to do in the cemetery.
Cemetery.
Yeah, and there doesn't have to be any damage other than the tree itself coming down.
That's
all. Okay. So, is there any further comments from our public or our staff, or any further comments? I guess we're looking for a motion that we can go into further discussion. And the motion is probably going to reflect a little change, so we have the flexibility.
It says not to exceed already, so.
Well, I would make a motion to approve the contract with Robinson's Landscape and Nursery at Boyne City in the amount not to exceed $14,739 on a timing basis, and authorize the city manager to sign the necessary documents.
I'll second that. Any further discussion? Roll call, please.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Sansom?
Aye.
Town?
Aye.
Conklin?
Aye.
Grunch?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Okay, thank you. Sunset Coast Verde Trail proposal. Who is that? Andy? Mike?
It's going to be Andy.
All right.
Well, I guess it's going to be Andy. You see the memo from Barb in front of you, just, you know, discussing all the things that we talked about at the Parks and Rec on two different occasions. About this Verde proposal. One of our members, Daryl Ferris, is an avid birding individual, rather enjoys it. I guess there is a group of people who have, throughout the country, actually, from what I understand now, there's different, like, they call them birding trails, the areas, like on the east side of the state, for instance, Tawas, Alpena areas, there's a couple of them over there, where there's places set aside for people to go in and do bird watching. So they're interested in getting something going on this side of the state. President of the Petoskey Regional Audubon Society is seems to be driving the bus on this one here to get something in Boyne City. We have a couple areas that they thought would be well attuned to that. One being Riverside Park as a primary location, and there are a lot of birds and wildlife in that area. So we have through our parks plan have really don't have to be kind of left as a nature type area and not, you know, major development going on in that park. So, and the other area that they were concerned or had an idea about would have been Veterans Park, the secondary location, because you can see the bald eagles and stuff flying around. So I guess the Parks Board is unanimously recommending to the City Commission that we approve the proposal from the Audubon Society to designate those two parks as birding locations and be added to their map. And we'll work with them on sign placement.
Any other commentary from our staff or public?
One more reason to come to Boyne City. We'll put us on the map with somebody else's group, taking advantage of a natural resource that we have here. Our staff has enjoyed watching the eagles return. fly over the lake and things of that nature. And if you have outside groups that would like to come and do this as well too, it's basically a little or no cost to the city. I don't see any downside to it whatsoever. If visitors that want us to give them the bird, I'd be glad to have it.
We'll let you do it, Mike.
I was curious, Andy, they didn't want avalanche in there?
Yeah, that's what I heard.
From my understanding, the birding opportunities there aren't really that good. You might see some grouse or something around there, just some regular songbird birds.
Yeah, songbirds.
I think they're looking for an area that's not so vast too.
And Barb also included a couple of brochures from.
Oh, yeah.
More discussion?
I think it's a great idea. And we need to get signage at Riverside Park, you know, to go along with it. But I think it's a great idea and bring some activity there. It's a wonderful place along the river. And I did go to the website, and you know, it does show a map, and it shows everything. You know, it's really well done. So,
thank you, Laura.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about it. I'm kind of a bird watcher myself, and not officially, but I'm going to get more involved in it. I was really surprised that the 47 million throughout the United States, 2 million bird watchers are in Michigan. And also that the prime season is really a good season for us to promote that and draw more people to the community. I did have the question about avalanche as well written down. I also had the question like Glenwood Beach area, which is not really a city beach, but it is right along the waterfront and there are a lot of birds in that area. So that might be another consideration to expand along the waterfront a little bit. And especially that time of year where it's at the peak of the summer, where it's crowded down there, it's just kind of lends itself naturally to that. So yeah, I think it's great. All for it. So.
Jane?
I support your recommendation.
Okay, Ron?
I support your recommendation also.
And I do too, so I will entertain a motion.
I move consideration to approve the proposal from the Petoskey Regional Audubon Society to designate Riverside Park and Veterans Park as birding locations to be added to the Sunset Coast Birding Trail map and website and work with staff on site placement.
A second.
Any further discussion? Roll call, please.
Sansom?
Aye.
Town?
Aye.
Conklin?
Aye.
Grunch?
Aye.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Moving on to item E, Rivermouth Restroom Renovation Engineering.
Yes, this is something that, other than the replacement of the roof at the Rivermouth Restrooms, has not been budgeted for in this current fiscal year budget. But I believe we have an opportunity, and we've had lots of discussion over the years about making improvements with regards to those restrooms. The improvements are both cosmetic. The building just kind of tired both inside and out. It doesn't present itself well. And also functional. For whatever reason, whenever that building was built, it's had water flow issues. Doors just aren't, don't function well, and they're susceptible to clogging on a regular basis. This last season wasn't too bad. The year before, it seemed like it was a lot worse. We have tried, our team has gone out there and done some digging and things like that in years past to relie some pipes, and that only kind of modified the issue. So we've been talking internally about what needed to be done to that facility. And I took the opportunity to ask Ray Kender from Environment Architects, who's our designer on both the pavilion and the city facilities project, to take a look at those restrooms and take a look and see what our options might be. Did the existing restroom portion of that building, because remember we've got almost two buildings there. In the front, closest to the street, you have the pump, one of our major pump stations that services the north end of town and sends sewage underneath the Boyne River in a pipe. and the back portion, which is the newer portion of it, which contains the restrooms. And they're kind of two buildings butted right up against each other. And did that back section need to be replaced, or did it make sense to try and refurbish in some sense? Ray went through and did a quick analysis of the building and felt that it was worth saving, it was the most cost-effective way to do that. He doesn't really suggest expanding the footprint much, but possibly using some of the like those vestibules that are where you kind of come in, which are basically just wind covers for any debris or anything that's blowing by, and possibly using those as expansion areas if necessary, depending on what the cost implications are. So he basically said, yeah, that building's worth saving and worth investigating further. The second component is there may be savings that would present themselves by using the contractors that we currently have working on the city facilities project to do some of the work there without having to go out through a separate bidding process. But we could do that as an amendment to their contracts. The funding would have to be a separate source since the money that the voters approved for doing that is just for that facility and can't migrate further down the road. But there could be some efficiencies. I mean, he's talking about, okay, we're going to have roofers over here at this building. You know, the roof that needs to be done at this at the Rivermouth restroom, and that portion really does need to be done. Just like a couple extra days of work for them, and they could order the materials pretty much at the same time. So we think there's some opportunities there. Those are the similar type of opportunities we talked about with the pavilion project. But again, we're lucky. I think we're talking about much more significant dollars there. We don't know for sure because we don't have anything that's costed out this project and haven't given us any idea exactly what it's going to come at. $50,000, $100,000, $200,000, I have no idea. But we really won't know and won't have a good basis for a discussion about that until we have somebody go through, work on a design, bring a design and concepts back to us and see if there's something that we're comfortable with. So I think no matter what we do with the Rivermouth bathrooms, at some point we're going to have to hire an architect, get a design that we can agree on, and then figure out, okay, how do we pay for it, which we'll still have to deal with here as well, too. As much as I don't like bringing another project up like this, and as I mentioned in my memo, doing this, and if we do desire to use the contractors here, kind of eliminates our ability for grants with regards to it because there won't be time to apply for them to try and do that. This does give us some solid information that I think that we need to, that we are going to need if we're ever going to want to do anything with those bathrooms other than just kind of cosmetically fix them as we go along. And it'll give us a basis from what to work, which we need to work from. We'll have some real numbers, we'll know what it'll cost to have these people do it, whether we can afford it, and whether we can actually get it done for some time in 2017. Or we could get to the point where we have this work done and we just put the brakes on it and say, okay, go out and start looking for grants, doing other things, and maybe we're going to do that project in 2 or 3 years. Either way, I think it starts with having an architectural design that we can work with and some cost estimates. So, and I'd also go back a little step further. If you've been by that building anytime in the last 4 years or so, you've seen shingles that have been blowing off. That roof, while it's not leaking inside yet, really does need to be replaced. And I like to do things once if we can. If we're going to remodel the building, if we're going to drop some light tubes in or something like that or do something different, I'd rather we do it once and put the roof on the way we need to do it rather than put a roof on. Then 2 or 3 years later, we're cutting in, having to redo it because that's when we do the rest of the project. I think there's some efficiencies to be gained by looking at it all together and then coming up with a strategic way of implementing the improvements. So even if we can't afford them all at once. So my recommendation is that the City Commission retain the services of Ray Kendrick and Environment Architects to provide design services for the remodeling and costing of the Rivermouth restroom at a price not to exceed $11,500 As noted in his memo, he would be doing this on a time and material basis, so it could cost less than this, but it wouldn't cost more with regards to it. Once we get that information, we bring it back to the commission with some staff recommendations on if and how to proceed.
Thank you. Do we have any staff or public commentary? We need it, right, Andy?
Yeah, definitely we need it. We also need to have some increase in the capacity of that facility also. And I think Ray talking about using those vestibule areas as a way to increase the capacity would be fantastic. Mm-hmm. Okay. Plumbing issues we just can't overcome because it's not properly installed. I got to believe underground. We can see some of it on a can work pipe as she goes up a little bit. You know what happens when the drain goes up in here, it's not good. So,
I'm going to go first on this one because I was always the one complaining about the bathrooms. And the community is what they leave. The reflection of the town is sometimes too often it's the bathrooms. So I was pretty vocal two summers ago that they were in pretty bad shape. To staff's credit, they were improved, and like Mike said, this summer was less hassles and a better presentation. It's also one of the first times that we're trying to go forward with, in my 5 years I've been a commissioner, without grant money for a project. So we've been pretty spoiled. We've been having grant money to initiate some of these bigger projects. So I'm for it with reservations because now the newest thing, 2 years ago it was bathrooms, now the newest comments from the public is our bike path. Once they get off the bike path, how in the heck will they get into town? So, I mean, it's where do we go? Do we spend money on a bathroom that people were talking about a year ago, or do we spend on bike path improvement to get them along Plague Street? So I'm cautious. Well, yeah, cautiously in support. So I wanted to go first. I usually go last. But, Laura, would you like to comment?
I'm kind of torn on this, and I'm all for public restrooms are really important, and I really feel like I took a trip down there today. I had never been inside of them, I have to admit, so I decided to take a trip in. And see how they were. They were relatively clean. I didn't go in the men's side. I don't want the other side. But anyway, they're relatively clean and whatnot. So
this is going to get interesting.
Go ahead.
I'm going to get red in the face. But yeah, we have an awful lot of. I mean, tourism is our number one industry, and visitors coming here, and the impression that leaves, I think, is really important. Plus, it needs a new roof. It backs up quite frequently. I understand. I asked a little bit around today. So my feeling is this money comes out of our general fund, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
My feeling is I think it's worth to. It's been in bad shape enough years. And it's not going to improve itself. That it's important to take care of. And going forward, you know, you don't know what you have to do until you have a design to do it with. So, you know, projection of what it will cost. I think it's a necessary location in town for public restrooms to function. And hopefully down the road we'll have new restrooms and a new facility for the pavilion. We'll have restrooms with the new city hall. I assume those are going to be open to the public generally. So we'll have a lot of good public restrooms in total when you add all those three projects up together. So I think it's important to move forward. I know it's money, but just think of all the money we'll save on utilities in the future with the new city hall and the new lights that we've replaced. And those kinds of things, so should offset it eventually. That's where I'm at.
Yeah, I think these have needed work done for a long time. And I think it's time we move forward to this project, so I support it.
You said it more succinctly than I did.
A couple of questions, you know, that weren't out in infrastructure, the plumbing and electric that's in that building, this $11,000 covering an estimate of what's going to cost to replace that too?
Yes.
That'd be a complete overview of it.
Yeah, I'm not aware that the electric is underserved in that facility. I don't think that's an issue. It would probably have to be modified, and depending on how the building's used, we may be moving electrical panels into that.
Well, I know it's something, I know my wife and I, we, every time there's a major event in town, we actually go in those bathrooms, and there's been several times where we've called for, you know, additional cleanup, but still it's, there's times, so the only thing I've, only time I've ever seen anything worse, it might be Wrigley Field or something like that. I mean, it's way past due, you know, given attention, and I support the recommendation, so. At least it'll give us a window that's needed to correct the situation, so.
Thank you.
Did we put the roof out to bid?
Yes, we did.
So we could actually not do that now and then use that money?
We have not awarded any bids for that.
So could we use that money to do this? So we're.
Yeah, we'll start taking the money out of the parks fund, and that's where this would come.
Yeah.
That'll still leave us kind of like we talked about in the tree discussion, we'll still have a roof to do though.
Yeah, right, but it could be patched in the meantime.
We're assuming that, yes, we talked about doing that to at least get us through the winter, so we know what we're dealing with.
Yeah, right. And then it's in the capital improvement plan for 2017, I think, so, you know, it's on the horizon. I agree with what everybody has said about those bathrooms, they're in dire need of improvement, and it's just, I don't know why it's coming up now though, rather than before, that's the only thing. I'm sure things change, but it's been on the horizon for a long period of time, so. But I fully support moving forward, especially since we already had the roof money allocated that we can just use for a long-term solution.
How much was the roof money?
I don't know, I couldn't, 11,000, was it 11 or 12, or, I couldn't find it.
I think I estimated, just for budget purposes, like 10.5.
Yeah, something that.
It came in quite a bit less, one bid, way higher than the rest, so. A couple of the companies are kind of questionable, so that's why, part of the reason why we held off, like, we need to regroup and figure out what we're gonna do, and then, you know, we decided to take a look at this route, so.
And this plan, I would assume, would be good for whenever in the future, you know.
Well, the cost estimates may change, but.
Right, but as far as the.
Right.
The concept, yeah.
To respond to, or to kind of add on to some of the comments down at you and Laura. At the very worst scenario, this gives us information basically a shovel-ready project.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that even if we don't want to do it now, it'll give us all the pieces with regards to it. And we've done that before, you know, when there was the borings for Court Street and things of that nature. If we decide that, yeah, the numbers just don't make sense for us to do it now or whatever, we could hold off, go after grants and things of that nature. So the very worst case that this would leave us with is the shovel-ready scenario. With regards to the timing issue, everybody's assumption was that we were really going to be a lot further along with the pavilion project and some viable alternate restrooms than we are. And that project is basically, as we all know, is run into some financial hurdles, so nothing's happening there, and we're not exactly that's too strong a term. That project has been delayed as we're trying to come up with alternate sources. We've applied for additional revenues and things of that nature. But again, this gives us another option, gives us two options so we can improve the restroom somewhere along the waterfront, close to the downtown.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Looking for a motion.
I make a motion that the City Commission accept a proposal from an environmental architect to provide design services for the remodeling of the Riverhoff bathroom facility for a price not to exceed $11,500 for the proposed services.
Second.
Any further discussion? Roll call, please.
Towne.
Aye.
Conklin.
Aye.
Grunch.
Aye.
Needhammer.
Aye.
Sansom.
Aye.
Motion carried.
Good. Anything under good of the order?
Question.
Go ahead, Laura.
Question for the good of the order. When is the last river draw sculpture going to be completed?
The discussion on that is sometime, hopefully in October or November.
Okay.
The design committee met on that. The statue itself, I believe, either is very close or has been returned from the foundry. Martha was reporting on the work that was done on that. Once that comes back to town, the assembly can start taking place with regards to the logs. And Barb came up with, there's a significant anniversary date in, I want to say it's like November 14th or something like that. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's November 14th when the Millers came, when the first settlers came to Boyne City.
That was 14th, 1856.
Mm-hmm. Just in time for this.
Yes.
Okay.
So again, you got that anniversary coming up.
Okay.
They're kind of using that. As a matter of fact, Patrick, who's been helping us with regards to the design committee functions, sent a memo, an email out to the design committee members, making sure that they are aware of that. Whether they'll make it or not, I'm not sure. So, but yet this fall, hopefully by that date.
Yeah. I guess I knew that. That was late, yeah, late in the year when it arrived. The stopping thing.
Jake?
Okay.
Tom, I just have one quick. Mike, is the DNR meeting sometime through the grant trust fund?
No, that is on the 19th. It'll be taking place in Lansing at the Lansing Community College. I'm planning on going to that and attending. There'll be further opportunities to do that at their December meeting as well too, so we may want to send another contingent at that point as well. It happens to fall on the same day that I think they're having the economic session in Traverse City that's being put on, where we've got representatives from the Michigan Municipal League and other agencies that have indicated that that'll basically talk about municipal finance structure in the state of Michigan. And I think we've had several of the commissioners indicate that they wanted to go to that. So I was hoping to go to that. Cindy and I had talked about that before until I found out that that's the same date that the Michigan Natural Resources Trust Fund Board is meeting on that date. Tom Bailey will be going down as well on that date. So I'm assuming that he'll make some positive comments. I reached out to other people to see if they would go, but haven't had any success yet.
So that they'll consider our grants then, or this is just to see how it operates and then it's done at a later
date? No, this is just background information to let them know that we're interested. It gives us an opportunity. It is not on their agenda formally. They have not requested us to come and provide any information on this like they did on like the Pavilion project and other projects in the past. So we're just going to go down and basically present our position to them that we're interested in it and how important it is to the community.
And I told Mike I'd go to Lansing with him or to Traverse City with the contingency for the finance.
Yeah, I'd be open to either one. I'm going to attend the housing summit too on the 24th in Traverse City.
Yeah, I've got on the list of that.
Okay.
And 20th is business after hours and our houses.
That is correct.
So next week's a busy week for Boyne City.
What else is there?
It's always busy.
All right. Anything else? The next regular city meeting, city commission meeting, is Tuesday, October 27th at noon. And I will make a motion that we adjourn.
Second.
I'm sorry, what?
October 27th is the Thursday. Sorry.
I just wanted to. The 25th. Thank you.
Oops.
Tuesday, the 25th at noon.
I won't be here. So.
Motion to adjourn. Be a second.
Second.
All in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you.